喂呀呦，喂呀哎呀呦，喂呀呦，哎呦，喂呀呦。
Meriwether Lewis, April 25th. The whole face of the country was covered with herds of buffalo, elk, and antelopes. They are so gentle that we pass near them while feeding without appearing to excite any alarm among them. They frequently approach us more nearly to discover what we are.
Welcome to Wisdom of the Elders. I'm Arlie Neskai. On April 14, 1805, the expedition passed a small creek. The creek already had a name, but Lewis and Clark gave it a new one. They named it after their interpreter, Toussaint Charbonneau, the French adventurer who had previously camped there. Lewis believed it to be the farthest any white man had ventured up the Missouri. Perhaps this was a momentous occasion for the explorers, but in the vast northern plains, crossed for thousands of years by the original tribes, the achievement loses some of its significance. What is striking about the Corps' journey from the Mandan villages to the headwaters of the Missouri is the abundance of life they encountered. Not one Indian was sighted during the entire journey, but sightings of wildlife abound. Lewis and Clark's journals are teeming with mosquitoes, elk, deer, buffalo, prairie dogs, hornets, magpies, wolves, bald eagles, bighorn sheep, and standing above them all, the lord of the plains, the ferocious grizzly bear. Although no Indians were sighted by the Corps, there were many signs of native occupancy, abandoned camps, war lodges, an antelope trap, and a lone Assiniboine dog. One man found a scarlet cloth several meters long placed in a tree as an offering. A lodgepole washed onto a beach, a rawhide football, an empty camp and a pair of moccasins indicate the haunting presence of the multitude of native people they had expected to find on the plains. While most Indians were elsewhere hunting buffalo, some tribal traditions suggest that Lewis and Clark were not missed by the Indians. In fact, they were being watched. Assiniboine historian Robert Forstar.
There's an ancient story here of our people that they seen these people coming up the river. They were a little excited. They came back into camp and they told a story that these people, they're coming here now. After they had a council, they just said, just trail them. Don't bother them. Unless, of course, they threaten you, then you can do what you have to. But we're not here to harm anybody. These white people that are coming. And so trail them to the Mussel Shell, which spills into the Missouri River from the south, close to Fort Belknap somewhere.
In today's program, we will feature the Assiniboine and the Gros Ventres. In the early 1900s, these tribes followed the buffalo across the northern regions of Montana, North Dakota, and far into Canada. The Assiniboine, speaking a language related to Sioux, originally migrated from the Great Lakes region. The word Assiniboine is from the Cree, meaning cooks with heated stones after their method of making soup. They called themselves Nakona or Nakanabi, meaning the friendly people. The Assiniboine acted as middlemen in the trade from the Hudson's Bay Company to the Mandan villages, exchanging guns and metal goods for horses and robes. Their position gave them great influence in the fur trade well into the 19th century. Today, they live in the Fort Peck and Fort Belknap reservations in north-central Montana. Assiniboine educator Joe McGeeshick was born and raised at Fort Peck.
The Assiniboine had been in contact with whites for 50 years before Lewis and Clark were trapping and trading with Frenchmen who had stayed on after the French and Indian War, 1763, when Britain comes to dominate the western half of the continent and what we know as Canada today through the Hudson's Bay Company.
The Gros Ventres were at first closely associated with the Algonquin-speaking Arapaho. Gros Ventres and Arapaho oral traditions record that they split up near the Red River in Canada sometime in the early 1600s. Pushed west by smallpox and warfare, the Gros Ventres were among the last of the tribes to move onto the northern plains. This is Gros Ventres elder Elmer Main.
The Gros Ventres were first found and went out with the Algonquins in Pennsylvania. The colony started moving in and taking over some of their land, and the Apricotic clan wound up down the Missouri River. Well, a lot of people had ships sailing the Missouri River up to Fort Benton, and so the Gros Ventres, they were starving, and so the French fed them, and their bellies swelled up. So a friend said, Gros-Ventre, that means big belly. But then that was not a real name.
They called themselves A'ani, meaning white clay people. They now live in the Fort Belknap Indian Reservation in north central Montana. I'm Arlie Neskai, and this is Wisdom of the Elders. Assiniboine elder Peter Bigstone has a big heart. It's swollen with a lasting love for his wife, his late grandfather, and his culture. In today's Elder Wisdom, Brian Bull tells how Bigstone speaks, even sings, his devotion to family and tribal traditions.
Peter Bigstone is a full-blooded Assiniboine from Saskatchewan who settled down in the quiet village of Harlan, Montana. A lumbering, stocky man, Bigstone is a jack of all trades, trained to be a mechanic, welder, carpenter, and drug and alcohol counselor. But hearing him talk, you'd figure that Bigstone's favorite role has been that of grandson.
I learned everything from my grandfather. He passed away when he was 99 years old, but a lot of people say that he was, maybe he was 105. He was a well-schooled guy in the old ways, because he was the last one of the last survivors of an Indian war. And that's why he has an Indian name, but he used Giantobo Hokshina. It means flying four boys.
Bigstone says from the time he was seven, his grandfather taught him many of the skills he needed to live in the wilderness of Saskatchewan.
And I started to learn how to ride horseback, look after myself. Taught me how to hunt, and he taught me how to make a bow, and he taught me how to shoot a bow, and all those things, you know, about animals and their ways in everyday living animal kingdom. And I've learned a lot of things to live with the nature. Medicinal values, plants, I've learned lots of that. I've learned how to manage my life in those four ways, you know, spiritually and emotionally and physically. And what my grandfather taught me, he taught me all the songs that it had a meaning in life. So I've learned lots of honor songs. I've learned lots of Sundance songs. I've learned lots of Gosnoha songs, ceremonial songs, you know. I've learned how to beat the drum with a certain pace, you know. So those things mean a lot to me, the songs, the prayer songs. A lot of stories that come to mind is how my grandfather lived in the old ways. He was one of the persons that I looked up to. After my mom and dad, they parted ways. And grandfather used to say, my grandson, Mitagor, you know, don't worry, you know, because they'll get back together. But I never thought about it until after my mom and dad, they went their ways for 30 years, they got back together, you know. And that's true prophecy to hear that from an old man, you know, an old man that knew it already.
Looking at Peter Bigstone's burly frame, it's apparent he's no couch potato. He remembers just what it took to make a living from the available resources he had as a boy, in a time and place far from big city conveniences.
I grew up chopping wood, and I hunted for my dinner. I snared rabbits. I went fishing. I went and wring ducks' necks, you know, use a little dog to make them go in the weeds. I drowned gophers to eat. I snared partridges. I ate lots of wild turnips. I ate lots of wild onions. I ate a lot of bulrushes, you know, bulrush soup, choke cherries, raspberries.
Bigstone says although it's been almost 30 years since his grandpa flying four boys passed on into the spirit world, his wisdom and guidance lives on.
I always keep my pipe dear to me because it was given to me when I was 9 years old. I feel I wasn't worthy of it. When I turned into a man, I couldn't hang on to it. Then I started being wild after my grandfather passed away. Then it took a few years of my life going to jail and trying to straighten out. 20 years ago, I started my life back on that same road that I had left before I started drinking. So when I came back to my life, I've been on it full force now. You have to have patience and you have to have wisdom to create your own world in this life. And if you follow the way of that guy upstairs, well, then you got it made. I've learned that from Grandpa. He's the one that that I look up to. You know, and even today, to this day, when I ask for grandfather's help, he's there for me in his own special way, his unique way, because I've learned that he had a spirit that I know, I see, and you can't, nobody else can see him, you know, but he shows me that he's there for me.
Big Stone says living off the land and supporting his wife are all a part of being a strong person.
That's why I always remember Grandfather real good, because he instilled that in me. He pushed me into my manhood. I don't take life as for granted, because it's something that I worked hard to be. Because I always say my grandfather is my lawyer. If I'm going to get to heaven, or you know, if I'm going to go to the great hunting grounds, I'm going to use my grandfather to be my lawyer and tell him I want to be there, you know.
Today, Big Stone is creating a piece of heaven for himself out on the Montana wilderness. He and his wife are celebrating 2 years of marriage. Big Stone says since their ceremony was held in a sweat lodge and presided over with a sacred pipe, their relationship isn't taken lightly.
There is no way that we can't get a divorce, because we have to work our problems over, you know, that it'll work for us. I never doubt my love for her. Sweetheart, daya won't she o'conno, won't all me a walking day.
Big Stone says his pride in his wife inspired him to compose a song for her.
We told ye co gipo, hey, you heard a little head home. That means sweetheart. We dance real good together, and I really like you, but I'm going to go home now. I'm scared of your cultural ways, because your cultural ways is different from mine, you know?
For Wisdom of the Elders, I'm Brian Bull.
Brian Bull is Assistant News Director for Wisconsin Public Radio and is an enrolled member of the Nez Perce Tribe. He lives with his wife, two kids, and three cats in Madison, Wisconsin. Coming up in Sacred Landscapes, Judy Bluehorse Skelton talks about the revival of the buffalo. And in Tribal Rhythms, Nico Wynn reveals the origin of the drum according to Assiniboine lore.
There's a story behind how we got the drum, how it came to be, who brought it to us, you know, the Thunder Beings, and who helped us to sing our first songs.
This is Wisdom of the Elders. Stay with us.